Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Way down south in Alabama, I got a friend they call Dancing Sammy, who's crazy about all the latest dances. Black bottom stomping, two babies prancing.
That's the actress Ebony Joanne in the title role of the August Wilson play, singing Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. It's part of the first ever recordings of all 10 plays that make up what's come to be known as August Wilson's American Century Cycle, now underway in WNYC's The Green Space. There's one play for each decade of the 20th century, making up a history of the African-American experience, all but Ma Rainey set in the Pittsburgh Hill District, where Wilson lived as a child. To talk about that history and Wilson's depiction of it, plus how to turn live stage drama into great radio, I'm joined by Ruben Santiago Hudson, the artistic director of this project, Stephen McKinley Henderson, its associate artistic director, and Arthur Yorings, the audio theater producer for the undertaking. Welcome all of you to the Brian Lehrer
Show. Thank you, Brian.
And Ruben, in your case, welcome back. And both you and Stephen McKinley Henderson worked with August Wilson on productions of these plays when he was alive, both as actors and directors. So how intimate is this to you?
You know, it's a very personal on that level that we're paying homage to not only a friend and a mentor, but arguably the greatest American or most profound American playwright in the past three decades.
Stephen?
Yes, well, I had the great fortune of working with him as an actor, and it is one of the reasons that I think that I left Kansas City and went away to join the circus. I think I ran away and found the place that I was supposed to be.
By the circus, do you mean the New York theater world?
Yes, I do.
As so many kids from all over the country, and certainly from the Midwest. The plays are being performed by amazing casts and directors in the green space, and there are, I guess, a few tickets opened up for the two remaining Saturday matinee performances, but even the sold-out shows are being streamed live online as they're being performed. Yes, Arthur? So
that's
people
correct.
Can see these.
Absolutely right. Absolutely. But they can see them and hear them and listen to them.
At WNYC.org and thegreenspace.org?
That's right.
And they'll be available for future viewing as well as radio dramas?
They'll be available for future listening at some point, yes. As soon as that we get to post-producing them and putting them all together, then there'll be a timetable and some might even be broadcast on air. We're still talking about that.
And I imagine it's going to be an incredible audio resource, assuming that it's archived.
Yeah, absolutely.
For all time.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, you can access it. It's great to have access to this sort of work by stalwarts to a certain degree of August's work, as well as people who've done the work and knew August intimately or either were connected to him. So for research, education, entertainment, curiosity, whatever, it'll be available.
Yeah. So, Stephen, where would you start to talk about Wilson's life and how he came to write this cycle? I realize that's a huge question, but he didn't set out to write 100 years of African-American history, as I understand it, did he?
Yeah. No, he wrote three plays, and then someone made note that they were all three written in different decades. But it was organic. Everything he did was an organic journey, and I think where it began is when he went to the Carnegie Library in Pittsburgh, and as a way of getting the rest of his education, when he was asked to not come back to school, and he didn't want his mom to know that he had been told so he would get his lunch and go to the library and read and then go home at the end of the day. And somewhere in that experience in that library, we became beneficiaries of a vision that we now have and we can now archive.
And I understand his father was a German immigrant but had little to do with August, and therefore August later took his mother's last name, which was Wilson, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, Daisy mm-hmm. Wilson, yes.
So let's hear an excerpt from one of the performances. This is from Fences. And it features you, Ruben. Maybe you can set it up. You're playing Troy Maxson, the garbage collector and former baseball player, and your son, played by Jonathan Majors. asks you why you don't like him.
Well, you know, Troy was a firm man. He didn't want his son to be hurt and harmed the way he had been harmed about athletics and sports. And he was a strong father, but a good father, a good man to that degree, as far as his love for his children. So he was trying to explain to his son and harden him for this world that he was to face.
So about 2 minutes of Fences.
How come you ain't never liked me?
Liked you? Who the hell say I got to like you? What law is there say I got to like you? Won't stand up in my face and ask a damn fool question like that, talking about liking somebody. Come here, boy, when I talk to you. Straighten up, goddammit, I ask you a question. What laws there say I gotta like you?
None.
Well, all right, then. Don't you eat every day? Answer me when I talk to you. Don't you eat every day?
Yeah.
Nigga, as long as you in my house, you put that sir on the end of it when you talk to me.
Yes, sir.
You eat every day?
Yes, sir.
Got a roof over your head?
Yes, sir.
Got clothes on your back?
Yes, sir.
And why you think that is?
Because of you.
Hell, I know it's cause of me. But why do you think that is?
Because you like me?
Like you. I go out here every morning, bust my butt putting up with them crackers every day because I like you. You about the biggest fool I ever saw. It's my job. It's my responsibility. You understand that? A man got to take care of his family. You live in my house, sleep your behind on my bed clothes, fill your belly up with my food, cause you my son. You my flesh and blood. Not cause I like you. Cause it's my duty to take care of you. I owe a responsibility to you. Now let's get this straight right now before it go along any further. I ain't got to like you. Mr. Rand don't give me my money come payday cause he like me. He give me cause he owe me. I didn't give you everything I had to give you. I gave you your life. Me and your mama worked that out between us. And liking your black ass wasn't part of the bargain. Don't you try and go through life worrying about if somebody like you or not. You best be making sure that they're doing right by you. You understand what I'm saying, boy?
Yes, sir.
Then get the hell out of my face and get on back down there to the AMP.
Reuben Santiago Hudson as Troy Maxson and Jonathan Majors as his son Corey Maxson in the Green Space production of Fences. What part of it made you laugh? Get back to your job at the AMP?
No, it was like he drops a lesson on him and all he needs him to say is he understood. Yeah. And then he said, now go get your job. Be responsible.
And I think one of the things that's so powerful about that excerpt, and especially maybe if some of the listeners don't know August Wilson's material, is that it shows how these conflicts are fully set within the family and the community. They aren't some academic history of American race relations, yeah?
Yes, in a certain way, but right there, this familial thing, this is how a father is trying to raise his son. Right after this, he talks to his wife. Troy talks to his wife, and he says, baby, I don't have no more to give. It's a very emotional, passionate, sympathetic, and vulnerable conversation he has with his wife right after this.
And I think, Stephen, that excerpt illustrates his use of the vernacular, including the N-word. Does that give the performers pause?
Well, it shouldn't give them pause, but I mean, I don't know. It is accurate. It is authentic. It is truthful, you know. You know, you have to realize that there none of us who were born, say, after 1949, we heard the word, man. You know, we heard the word, we used the word, and it can be used affectionately toward others. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's really not it's not an issue. It would be difficult to do August plays. You know, the thing that they talk about taking the word out of a Huckleberry Finn, or even when they do Front Page, you know, there would be something very amiss if you did not authentically speak.
Arthur Yarnks, maybe you can talk a little about how the performance that we just heard, which is, a reading, a dramatic recitation of it, if that's the right way to put it.
Right.
For audio purposes primarily, how is that different from a fully staged version, other than that the actors don't move?
Well, what we've done and what Reuben and Stephen have done, basically all we've done is removed the stage directions and removed any of the visual components. Although for the live audience, I've been delighted to see the inventiveness of Reuben and Stephen adding a few little gestures here and there for the people in the room. But for the audio listener, what we're doing is, these aren't radio plays. Let's be very clear. August would be the first one to say that. He would have adapted them for radio if he wanted to put them on radio as a theatrical experience. So what we're doing is we're really archiving the dramatic reading of these terrific stage plays with a very, very light accommodation to create an audio experience for the listener who may not be familiar with the story or the narrative or the play itself.
So not much tampering with the scripts make them friendlier for audio only.
No. These are not adaptations. I mean, if to be fair to August, and in essence to be fair to the form of radio theater, we should be clear about that these are not radio plays. These are the stage plays that August wrote.
Ruben Santiago Hudson, Artistic Director. Stephen McKinley Henderson, Associate Artistic Director. Arthur Yorings, the audio theater producer, as we talk about the productions for WNYC's The Green Space and really for audio posterity of the 10 plays in August Wilson's American Century Cycle, still in progress. In a roundtable discussion, Stephen, for Playbill about these performances, everyone seemed to vividly recall the first time they saw Wilson play, seeing the people they grew up with and hearing the stories they'd heard transformed into art on the stage. Is that what he did that was new to American theater?
Well, yes, and he elevated, but he did it with exalted language. He took the vernacular, he took the voices. But because he was a great poet before he became a playwright, he also did that marvelous thing that Sophocles did and that Shakespeare did, where he took the language and he elevated it. So that's why there's no tampering that we need to do to help it, because the beauty of that poetry is, it'll be around for a long time.
And you mentioned Shakespeare. I noticed, Ruben, that one of the comments on the Green Space website called Wilson "Our Culture Shakespeare."
Mm-hmm.
He didn't cite Shakespeare as an influence, August Wilson, that you know of, did he?
Not that I know of, but anybody who has read any theater would have to be influenced somehow by the brilliance of William Shakespeare or Chekhov or August Wilson, for that matter.
He did reference the blues, Jorge Luis Borges, Romare Bearden, Amiri Baraka.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the three Bs.
Four Bs.
Yeah, four Bs with the blues, yes, sure enough.
So, listeners, we should tell you there are three more chances to maybe see in the Green Space or live stream these amazing performances. Tomorrow at 7, Stephen McKinley Henderson will be one of the performers in King Hedley II. Then on Tuesday, Gem of the Ocean will be performed, and the series concludes next Saturday with Radio Golf. Stephen, where does King Hedley fit into the cycle?
It's an 80s play, and it was my first Broadway show, and it was with Viola Davis, and she won her first Tony for that. I won't be playing the role that I did then, but it's just a joy to have been able to play several roles in certain plays if you're in the right age group. And then there are these wonderful young actors who are going to get to play everything from a child in Joe Turner all the way to, Bynum in the same play. So
That one's the story of an ex-convict in Pittsburgh trying to rebuild his life by selling stolen refrigerators so he can save enough money to buy a video store.
That's one way to put it. It's about a
much
lot
deeper than that.
Yeah, it goes very deep.
You know, everything that happens in these plays, these are people finding their lot in life, surviving in under the circumstances that our country has put them in. So, but everybody's cause is a noble cause. He's not just taking the refrigerators, and just go buy some crack. He's taking refrigerators to pay his phone bill, to pay his light bill, and feed his family. So he's not stealing them. Somebody says, "Can you sell these?" And he didn't ask the man where he got them from. He said, "Yeah, how much do I get for selling them?"
Yeah, and it's exactly what I took from that one-line summary that I read from that of a play that I haven't seen. That it obviously shows the complexity of life, where the illegitimate mixes with the very legitimate.
Yes. But that's just like saying the piano lessons about a black man selling watermelons. No, it's
I
not.
I hear you.
You know.
And Radio Golf is the concluding play. It's set in the 1990s and is about an African-American politician. Wilson died in 2005, so he didn't live to see Barack Obama elected president. Think the 21st century will need its own cycle?
Well, the writers are writing right now. But I just think it's wonderful that August tipped his hat to the art of radio with his last play, and it's apropos that we should be using radio to archive for future audiences.
And Arthur Yorinks, what determined the order of the plays as they're being presented in this series? I think they're not chronologically as written, right?
No. Chronologically as performed.
As written.
As written they are.
Yeah, they are.
Oh, yes, as written. Written.
Not really as written because Jitney was first and Jitney didn't get performed first. But the way they were presented in New York.
New York. Yeah.
And do you see a progression, anything that you can say in a short amount of time, a progression from the first to the tenth in the way he wrote, the way he thought, anything?
Well, any great writer writes about what he knows, what the times, it reflects the times politically, personally, and he did that, and he did evolve, and he was concerned about things of each decade and each time, and you can see it in the writing. He did evolve as a writer, and his voice at certain times was militant, and at certain times was religious, and certain times was, but at all times, passionate.
Any example of that evolution you want to add, Stephen?
Well, I just think it's very prophetic that he ended up with the first and the last, that he was able to bookend the body of work that he had written so organically, and then he ended up writing Jim of the Ocean, in 1904, and then with Radio Golf. Everything he did somehow, there was a larger force at play.
Do you have a personal favorite, having acted in many?
Well, my personal favorite is the next one that I get a chance to do. But I'd have to say Joe Turner's Come and Gone.
Because?
The eloquence of the language, the exalted text, the fact that it speaks to so many people, that I've had so many different people in the world say that reminds them of a relative, or something. And I mean, Chinese and Polish and everywhere.
I want to give a shout out to Indira Etwaru, the executive producer of this project. We're glad to have her back with us at WNYC for this very special series of events. And we thank Ruben Santiago Hudson, Artistic Director of the project, Stephen McKinley Henderson, Associate Artistic Director, and Arthur Yorinks, the Audio Theater Producer. And we will leave you with more music from the cycle, from an a cappella prison song from The Piano Lesson.